bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. To the consternation of the diplomatic world, the main political committee of the UN General Assembly has dealt with two opposing resolutions on Korea by approving them both. I'm Jerry Lande, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. One of the rival resolutions was supported by the United States. Among other things, it reaffirmed the responsibility of both the UN and 40,000 American troops there to the continued peace of the divided peninsula. That resolution passed. Then the committee considered a communist-supported proposition calling for the dissolution of the UN command and the withdrawal of the American forces. That resolution also passed. Barring compromise, both to be submitted to the full assembly next month. One delegate calling the situation ludicrous and impossible. Another said failure to achieve compromise would only heap more ridicule on the United Nations. More news in a minute.
My daddy loves me.
I went to the zoo once with him.
He tickles me a little.
It's because it's a long ride and it's fun to go with your dad.
And ate our lunch. We had fun and we played some games.
When he lies down on the rug, I hop on him and I punch him. Then he'd be silly to me.
We went to the park and we ate some french fries and some hamburger.
He does nice things and stuff.
He's a tickle monster sometimes.
It takes so little of you to give so much to them. Give your children everything. Give them your time.
He should love you and hug you forever.
A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Under a tight security shield, President Ford has traveled back to California to help raise cash for the Republican Party. Mr. Ford was to address a Los Angeles dinner Wednesday night and a San Francisco luncheon Thursday. But the co-sponsor of the two events, former Governor Ronald Reagan, found something to do elsewhere. Reagan associates confessed his concern that an appearance with the president now might dilute his own impending presidential challenge to Mr. Ford. In his Los Angeles speech, Mr. Ford said he needs support from the rank and file to help, as he put it, bring sanity to the spending madness of a Congress controlled by Democrats. The Republican National Committee is apparently having trouble meeting its budget. An official reveals the committee may be as much as $1 million in the red by year's end, possibly meaning 2 weeks of payless paydays for staff around Christmas. The official blaming a shortage of contributions from so-called fat cats, big givers who've been scared off by the new campaign finance laws and by backlash from Watergate. President Anwar Sadat of Egypt called on American businessmen Wednesday night to help provide a blood transfusion, as he put it, for the Egyptian economy. Correspondent Richard C. Hotellet reports.
Speaking to a dinner of the Economic Club of New York, Sadat said that Egypt's economy had, quote, sunk to zero after the war in October 1973 under the weight of an accumulation of problems dating back to the 1950s. In the last 20 years, we built an iron curtain around ourselves, he said, and as a result, we have been separated completely from new technology and the rest of the world. Therefore, I have started an open-door policy. Sadat said the Egyptian Stock Exchange was being reopened and foreign investors invited to bring not only capital, but also their know-how into partnership with Egyptians in a process of peace. But above all, he went on, his trip here was designed to establish good relations with the United States, relations which the Egyptian people yearn for. Richard C. Hotellet, CBS News, New York.
The Israeli government has sharply attacked President Sadat's speech before the UN General Assembly Wednesday and earlier remarks about Zionism as a contribution not to enlightenment, but to stalemate or to war. At the UN, Sadat called for the resumption of the Middle Eastern Peace Conference at Geneva, a conference to include the Palestine Liberation Organization, which does not recognize the existence of Israel. Now this.
Hi, world. Denny Bracken with the champion squash buckler of all time, Mike Roy. That's a clue, it is, to what we're going to do tomorrow on The Cook Thing over CBS. And with the whole story, Super Chef himself.
Well, tomorrow we make a marvelous side dish. It's called Cup of Gold Acorn Squash.
Well, that's a mouthful.
I always wanted to invent a dish called How to Squish a Squash.
How to Squish Squash?
Yes.
Squishy squash, friends. You're going to hear from the Squash Buckler tomorrow, right here on the cooking thing, CBS Radio Net.
On the Sioux Indian Reservation in Sisseton, South Dakota, hard times are nothing new.
Yeah, we are called poverty people and everything else, but whatever.
What is new is a cattle raising cooperative funded by the Campaign for Human Development.
The main idea is to have everybody help themselves by getting their own machine and doing the things for themselves.
The Campaign for Human Development, the United States Catholic Conference.
President Ford's firm final rejection of federal help has sent New York officials back to the drawing board to blueprint a way out of virtually certain default by mid-November. A major investment rating service, Moody's, reacted to Mr. Ford's speech by downgrading New York's credit rating to default status, meaning that without guarantees of some sort, no lender would venture capital on a New York security formally branded with the stigma of high risk. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall, principal of this little dread schoolhouse, where our curriculum consists of lessons in mystery, suspense, and the macabre. We say they were giants, those founding fathers of ours, and indeed they were, giants of intellect, morality, and ability. But they were also human giants, bedeviled by human problems, tormented by heedless children, persecuted by jealous enemies, embarrassed by foolish friends, and even haunted by ghosts.
It's a ghost, John. It must be a ghost.
There is no such thing as a ghost.
I heard him.
You're talking like a woman, Abigail.
And what does that mean?
Well, it shows that no matter how intelligent a woman may be, in the end she has certain weaknesses that... Well, there is no such thing as a ghost. Well, what's that?
Oh, tell me there's no such thing as a ghost. Well, what, John? Are you about to start talking like a woman, too?
Our mystery drama, Ghost Powder, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Marion Seldes and Michael Wager. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Buick's 1976 Century Regal is the most luxurious midsize car Buick builds. But it's also got a practical side. In fact, it makes a concession to practicality that no other American midsize car does. It comes with a V6 engine and a Buick V6 at that. Regal, it's got the spirit.
You probably have a friend who drinks too much, but you can't talk to him about it because, why? Because it's not polite. Nonsense. Friends are supposed to get involved, so don't be polite. Help him. talk to him and write to us. We'll send information that can help you help him. Write Alcohol Box 2345, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
This message is a public service by this station and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
This is Beverly Sills. Did you know that of all the arts, music is the only one in which a blind person can participate freely in spite of blindness? However, even in music, the blind need special help in order to stand on an equal footing with the sighted. The Lewis Braille Foundation for Blind Musicians works to promote the interests of the blind in the field of music. The foundation, a national nonprofit organization, urgently needs your financial help. The services of the Lewis Braille Foundation are available to any blind person and provide auditions, evaluations and counseling, scholarship aid, paid engagements for qualified musicians, and transcription of music into Braille. The foundation depends solely on the public for its support. Send your tax-deductible gifts to the Lewis Braille Foundation, 112 East 19th Street, New York, 10003. If you know a musically gifted blind person who needs help, please contact the Lewis Braille Foundation at area code 212-982-7290.
If you were to say to John Adams, "You can't tell the players without a scorecard," naturally, this great American wouldn't know what you mean. But if somehow you could explain it, he would fix you with that level, steadfast look of his and say that you couldn't tell the players even with a scorecard. Here was John Adams in 1784, getting more flack from our recent French ally than from our former English enemy. Here he was, ambassador to Paris from the United States, and nobody really quite knew just what the United States was, or were. His colleagues, Franklin and Jefferson, were great men, as we all know, but very difficult to live with. His wife, Abigail, insisted that she couldn't run the embassy properly on his meager salary, and when he asked the Congress for more money, their answer was to cut his wages. In addition, their rented chateau, a place called Auteuil, was haunted by a ghost.
But Henri swears he heard him.
Which one is Henri, Abigail?
Henri is the one who cleans the floors.
When did anyone ever clean the floors in this place?
Well, Henri does the best he can.
It isn't good enough.
Now, dear, about the ghost.
There is no such thing as a ghost.
Let us discuss this rationally.
How can you possibly discuss a thing like a ghost rationally? It's a contradiction in terms.
John, you simply cannot close your mind.
Are you telling me you actually believe that...
I am telling you what Henri said.
I see. An illiterate French peasant has suddenly become a respected authority on the supernatural.
Why don't you talk to him?
How can I speak to him? I don't speak his language.
Ah, but he speaks yours.
I noticed that.
You noticed what?
The aha, he speaks yours. The ah of reproach. See how this humble, uneducated man takes the trouble to learn your language while you will not bother to learn his.
That isn't what I meant to say. But now that I hear it stated, I must say I agree with it.
I am far too busy to study this exercise in nasality.
But, darling, you are the ambassador.
Not exactly. I am the minister plenipotentiary. And Mr. Benjamin Franklin is the ambassador.
Well, actually, Mr. Franklin is the ambassador emeritus.
I wish Mr. Franklin would go home to Philadelphia, where I understand he is worshipped.
Mr. Franklin is coming to dinner.
Oh, no.
Why are you so stuffy this afternoon, John? It's so unlike you.
I've been away from Boston too long.
Now, about Henri and his ghost.
I don't wish to talk about Henri and his ghost. What is there that I can say to this superstitious servant who...
Why don't you listen to him first?
Oui, Monsieur Adams, I have heard him.
How do you know it's a him?
It's a voice of a him.
And what does he say?
He says nothing.
Well, this is a fuss over... nothing.
John.
Well, how can he hear him if he says nothing?
He says something, but I do not understand him.
Does he speak French?
Français, no.
Does he speak English?
Anglais, no.
Then what does he speak?
He speaks ghost.
Ghost.
Yes, ghost language.
Oh, there's a ghost language.
Oh, yes, Monsieur Adams.
But what is this ghost language? And where do you hear this alleged language?
Oh, I hear him all over.
But where? Particularly?
In the library, in the bedrooms, and all over.
How can I get rid of a ghost?
You must call in a witch.
A witch?
Yes, the witch comes in and says a charm, and the ghost runs away.
Why?
Because the ghost is frightened.
Oh, now look, my good man. There is no such thing as a ghost, and I think you had better get back to work.
My uncle, he said the same thing. And one morning he is found throat cut.
If you spent more time getting the place clean, as you are paid to do, instead of weaving these impossible fables about ghosts...
The master will give this matter his full consideration, and we shall rid the house of the ghost.
Thank you, madam.
And you may finish cleaning the floors.
I go, madam.
Now, Abigail, I do not relish being called the master as if I were some feudal aristocrat.
Ah, but your dear friend Tom Jefferson is a feudal aristocrat back home, and he is called master by hundreds of slaves.
We are not discussing Tom Jefferson. We are discussing a matter of gross superstition. Why must I indulge him in his superstitious nonsense?
To make my life easier.
What does this have to do with you?
One day, my dear, there will be another revolution. A revolution of the women.
What on earth do women have to revolt about?
It will come in a faraway future. I shall not live to see it.
My dear, I do wish you would stay to the subject. Although you change it so many times, I confess I am at a loss to know where exactly we are.
Call in a witch and have this demon, this ghost...
This figment of Henri's imagination...
Well, this whatever it is, properly exorcised from the premises.
My dear... It does the lower element no good to reinforce their superstitions.
Perhaps not, but it will do me good. Henri's story has infected the entire staff. I want you to go along with this mumbo-jumbo before they all run away.
Oh, let them. We can hire others.
No one will want to work here. Oh, please, John.
Hire a witch. To realize... What would happen if word of this reached home? I'd be the laughing stock of the country.
The thing can be done for a single silver franc.
And Jefferson? What will Jefferson say?
I will tell Henri to find a witch and have her here tomorrow.
I forbid it.
John, I cannot maintain this house without servants. I can't entertain at official dinners, and I insist...
I will not reinforce the dark ignorance of the human race.
John, please.
I have nothing more to say.
This is a matter of housekeeping. It doesn't concern you.
Whatever lessens the dignity and the sanity of the human race concerns me.
You're not making a speech before the Congress. Oh, I'm sorry, John. I just realize how I sound.
Well... I realize how I must have sounded.
Good. Let's compromise. And call in a witch.
No, I cannot permit it.
Do you understand? I can no longer be mistress of this embassy.
Yes, I realize that, and therefore I shall resign the post.
John, this is...
This is an impasse, my dear. Each of us is standing on a principle.
But you can choose to resign.
But I cannot choose to be party to the dark barbarism of the Middle Ages. I cannot sanction witchcraft. Well, the truth of the matter is the French do not wish for us to sign a treaty with England.
John, come to bed.
And neither Franklin nor Jefferson can see it.
We've had enough politics for one night.
They flatter Franklin to death.
Can't we talk about it in the
morning?
Of course,
Jefferson is so grateful to France.
John,
Why can't Tom understand that we did more for France than France did for us?
One day, everyone will understand it, but tonight...
England are mortal enemies. Our independence is a body blow to England.
Why do you and Franklin and Jefferson argue so ceaselessly? Each of you has already stated his position.
I intend to go back to Boston.
Yes, dear.
Retire from political life.
Of course.
Attend to the farm.
That would be nice.
Practice a little law.
Certainly.
You don't believe what I'm saying.
Not a word of it. Yes?
Madame?
What is it, Pauline?
Madame, I am frightened.
Of what? The ghost.
Which ghost?
Oh, I would assume it's the same one.
Oh, now somebody has to put his foot down.
John.
Young woman.
Monsieur.
There is no such thing as a ghost.
Oh, monsieur, one does not make the joke about the ghost.
It is silly, nonsensical, superstition, and I have had quite enough. Now, as master of this house, I order you to get to your bed and have yourself a full night's sleep in order that you may be fit for your duties in the morning. Is that understood?
But, monsieur...
That will be all. Good night. Not another word. You may leave.
You have just transformed a problem into a disaster.
You told me these people were peasants, and so I thought I would speak like a master.
They can't accept you as a master.
They can't? Why not?
Well, it has to do with the customs of the country.
I am becoming rather satiated with the customs of this country.
You do not behave like the master of a chateau.
Well, how does a master...
Well, a true gentleman of the blood would have, in addition to his wife, a mistress.
I'm not old enough. Perhaps when I reach Mr. Franklin's age...
Oh, John, tomorrow morning, please, hire a witch.
Why? It can't be morning.
John, listen.
To what?
What is that?
That? It's your imagination.
You don't hear it?
Yes, I think so.
Well, is it your imagination, too?
No.
What? What is it?
It's a
ghost.
Now, Abigail.
I know there's no such thing as a ghost, but what do you call that?
Well, it...
John, I remember my grandfather and my aunt. They'd tell us children stories about... John, I'm frightened.
Oh dear, Abigail, it's impossible.
This big, gloomy, frightening house. Who knows what crimes may have been committed here?
Abigail, there's no such thing as a ghost.
Then why is your hand shaking?
In broad daylight, in safe, secure, and familiar surroundings, there is never such a thing as a ghost. But in the dead of the night, in a strange country, in a large, gloomy house, one can never really be sure. We have never had, in this country, a more down-to-earth, sensible pair than John and Abigail Adams. But they've never had occasion to spend a night like this one, either. I shall return very shortly with Act Two.
Ahmed is rattling his pan, begging for food. If he doesn't get it, he's going to die. Ahmed lives in Pakistan, and he's only 11 years old. He needs our help. George W. is an alcoholic. He wishes he weren't, but it's a disease, and he wants to get rid of it so he can once again support his family and bring dignity back into his life. Most of us are much better off. We have enough food to eat, and we have good health. When worshiping God, we express our thanks. But God wants more from us than thanks. We must do something for those of us not so well off. This year, while celebrating America's 200th birthday, join with others at your local church or synagogue and make plans to help relieve suffering. You'll end up helping yourself as well. Welcome God to America's bicentennial. Practice what you pray. A public service of Religion in American Life, the Ad Council, and this station.
Some 3,000 calls a month like this one come into the National Gun Tracing Center from law enforcement agencies throughout the country requesting information on guns used in crimes.
Hello, this is ATF with the Gun Trace request.
We check with both national and foreign manufacturers and forward the dealer's name to the requesting agency. In some cases, we can do this in a matter of minutes.
I will hold. I'm sorry to report that the owner said the gun was stolen about 6 months ago, and he forgot to report it.
I'm Rex Davis, director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
thank
gun
you.
Gun tracing is often the only means of solving a crime. If you secure your gun against theft, you make our job and that of your local police that much easier. Place a complete description of your gun with your other important papers. And if your gun is stolen, report it at once to the police or ATF. Remember, your stolen gun threatens everyone.
It isn't easy to be a man of intelligence and integrity, to speak one's mind and stand on principle at a time when men are valued for their flexibility. Nor is it easy to be a woman of wisdom and candor at a time when women were valued purely for decorative and pleasurable purposes. And so, we have described John and Abigail Adams. And these two intelligent and rational people are now having what can be described as a crisis of confidence. Each would insist there is no such thing as a ghost. And yet...
What's that? Oh, John, it's a ghost.
But Abigail, there is no such thing
as a... I know, but just tell me what that is.
I am going to find out.
Let me come with you.
No, you stay in bed.
No.
I'll settle this thing once and for all.
John, do we have a pistol?
Now, when did we ever have a pistol in this house?
But you have to have something to...
Well, if it's a robber, this fireplace poker...
But suppose the place is being robbed. What is there that we really care about? Besides, that can't be a thief. Thieves would be quiet. What's that?
I'll go see.
John!
Oh, my head.
Just lie quietly, my dear. You have a rather large bump on your head.
What happened?
I don't know. I found you lying on the floor in the hallway. The servants helped me to put you to bed.
The servants?
Especially Henri. Everyone's anxious to know what Monsieur Adams thinks of ghosts now.
I remember. I heard that noise and then somebody screamed.
That was Pauline. She heard the ghost and she was frightened.
I ran into the hallway. Something hit me on the head.
Who?
It didn't have to be a who. It could have been I could have run into that low ceiling beam near the stairwell.
Something was making that noise. Oh, John... May we have Henri call in a witch?
Abby, I...
Dear, what harm can it do? If there's no such thing as a ghost, then all we've lost is a single silver franc. But if there is such
now,
a thing...
Now, Abigail...
Please, John. It's the only way that I'll be able to keep the servants.
All right. But no one must know.
I'll be silent. Silent as the grave.
That is hardly a fortunate figure of speech.
John, dear, this is Madame Pinepessa.
Monsieur.
How do you do? And, you are purported to be a witch?
Purported? What does Monsieur mean, purported? I am a witch.
Well, I mean...
Monsieur is a politician. I am a witch. Whose profession is older and more honorable?
Well... What can you do for us, Madame Pinepessa?
The noise you hear is the Duc d'Ormond.
How do you know?
He was strangled in this chateau.
Why?
It was 200 years ago. He was the Queen's lover. She came to visit him here. They were betrayed. These things happen.
But if he's dead...
What can I say, Monsieur? We are told... that those who are killed for love never really die.
Ah, so he wanders about the chateau, does he?
Yes, monsieur. Wandering and wailing for his lost love.
And how do you propose to dispose of him?
That, monsieur, is my own secret. There are tricks to every trade. I do not ask how you employ yours. Accord me this similar courtesy.
Ah, Count de Vergennes.
Madame said to wait for you here, Monsieur Adams.
Welcome, Your Excellency. To what do I owe the honor of this visit?
Monsieur, I think we might discuss your rental of several French frigates of war.
Your Excellency, we have no need of...
But you have no navy to speak of at present. And the Algerine pirates?
Oh, yes, we... We do have trouble with the pirates on the Barbary coast.
And since the building of a battle fleet is, of course, prohibitively expensive...
We are aware of the problems involved.
It will be difficult to raise funds through taxation. Your countrymen cannot seem to agree on the necessity to tax Virginia planters and Pennsylvania farmers in order to protect the interests of New England merchants.
Sir, this is our internal affair.
Naturally, Mr.
Besides... We have other sources of revenue.
Have you? I'm given to understand that the Prussian loan is encountering difficulty.
Do you, sir?
It is common knowledge. Well, I must be going. Good day, monsieur. Such lovely weather.
Yes. Thank you.
John, Tom Jefferson is in the library.
Good, we have business.
But... You and I and Nabby and Colonel Smith were to go riding this afternoon. John, he wants to marry her.
It's time Mr. Tom Jefferson and I reached a meeting of the minds.
John, I said Colonel Smith wants to marry your daughter.
Later.
No, they don't want to wait.
Do you know what Tom Jefferson is doing? He is selling us out to France.
John, it's impossible.
You're defending. You're actually defending Tom Jefferson.
I disagree completely with his manners, his morals, his philosophy. But I like him, and I believe he's sincere.
Abigail, he has become a creature of the French, and I can prove it.
Well, John, why did you want to see me?
Tom, we must have this out.
Hmm? What?
Well, George Washington won't live forever. Hamilton... Too unpopular, personally. Hancock, Jay, Pinckney, nobody really thinks they have enough.
Enough of what?
Burrs, they're too slippery.
What is all this, John?
This is the talk that's going on at home. This is how people are thinking and speculating. It's going to come down to a fight between you and me.
What kind of a fight?
Power. Who is going finally to rule our country?
I never thought much about it one way or the other. You want the truth, John. I think you're more qualified. You'd do a better job of it.
Maybe you think that, but your friends, your Federalist friends, won't let you think that way forever. They'll egg you on for their own purposes.
Don't you have the same kind of friends that I do, John?
Yes, and all with axes to grind. And I shall be the victim of my friends, too. And it has to be this way, Tom.
Why?
You and I... We are on opposite sides of every question. One of us has to prevail.
Maybe not. Maybe the people will split the differences between us.
Maybe they will. But still, we have to fight it out.
We can fight as friends, John.
No. You have already betrayed me and the country.
Be careful what you're saying, John.
Oh, stop talking like a southern aristocrat. What do you propose to do? Challenge me?
How dare you accuse me of betrayal?
You and I were sitting in this room night before last. We spoke to the progress of the Prussian negotiations.
Yes?
I had confidential information that things were going badly. You and I were the only ones in the city of Paris who knew it, or so I thought. This morning, the Count de Vergennes tried to use that fact to strengthen France's bargaining position.
Well, what does that have to do with me?
Well, if you didn't tell him, who did?
Ben Franklin was also in the room.
When I read the dispatches from Prussia, Ben Franklin had fallen asleep.
Oh, what makes you think I told Vergennes?
Your friendship for France is notorious.
I am grateful to France for helping us overthrow the British yoke.
Would you have us exchange the British yoke for one made in Paris?
I am here to represent the interests of my country.
You were the only one who could have told Vergennes.
But I didn't do it. On my word of honor. What am I saying? Why am I trying to insist on something that should be beyond question? My integrity. How dare...
Tom...
We worked on the Declaration of Independence together. How can you even accuse me?
Tom, I'm sorry. I don't know what to think. Someone is betraying our secrets.
Does anyone else know?
No one.
Are you sure? Can you swear that not one other single, solitary soul?
Yes, I can swear. Well.
Well, what?
Abigail knows.
Abigail?
Well, I have no secrets from Abigail.
But these are matters of government secrets.
I know, but Abby is my counselor.
Abby is only a woman.
Only a woman. Yes, but I share everything with her.
Is it possible? No, I can't say it. Abby could never.
Can you forgive me, Tom?
Well, I'll have to. I'm sure I'll be forced to think, to say certain things in the future for which you'll have to forgive me. But how could Virgin have found out?
I don't know. Unless the walls have ears.
Now, that's impossible, John.
Who can say, Tom? After all, these are French walls.
John.
Oh, did I wake you, my dear?
Ah, you know I always wait up for you. How was your day?
Well, Tom Jefferson and I will somehow manage to live as friendly rivals. The British are impossible. French are unreasonable. They are unmovable. The Prussians are inscrutable. How was your day?
Well, we got through it somehow.
Has our sorceress managed to exorcise the ghost?
So far, the staff seems quiet.
Who could have told Virgin?
Perhaps the courier.
Oh, no. I would stake my life on his loyalty.
Well, it's a problem we should sleep on. After all, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof.
I agree.
Listen.
I thought our witch took care of all of that.
Help! Help! That's Madame Pinipis.
Madam Pinipes.
Something. Someone struck her down.
Have the servants fetch water and bandages.
You won't get any servant to come into this room. I'll go myself.
No. Help me. Help me.
Now, just try to be quiet, madam.
It's true. It's true.
What is true?
There is. I never believed, but there is such a thing as a ghost. I saw him. I saw
you. You saw whom?
The ghost. The ghost.
Madam. Madam Pinipes, speak to me. Speak. Say something. Madam.
That's twice the ghost or whatever has struck. But this blow appears to be fatal. Is it a ghost? Well, we have the word of perhaps a foremost authority, a witch. Who would know more about the subject? You'll get to know a great deal more when I return in just a few moments with Act 3.
In case you've forgotten how much fun driving can be, Buick would like to introduce you to Skylark, a small car that's all Buick, with room, comfort, and an engine that no other compact car in America offers, the incredible Buick V6. Skylark, it's free spirit made practical.
This is Carol Burnett. The International Rescue Committee, IRC, was started in 1933 to help refugees from Nazi Germany. Since World War II, IRC has helped thousands who've escaped from Hungary, Cuba, China, East Germany, and Russia, or wherever freedom is pretty much of a meaningless word. But the people who help people need your help, so please send your money to this address. International Rescue Committee, Box 16, Times Square Station, New York City, New York, 10036.
It's me, Helen Hayes, and now it's Trick or Treat, but with a slightly different twist. I'm putting aside all the many masks of character an actress must wear in her career and appearing here before you as Helen Hayes, person of the world, asking you to think briefly of the millions of children all over the world who know little or nothing of Halloween and its wood smoke and witches, of ghoulies and ghosties and things that go bump in the night. Kids who know only the grim realities and the unwelcome specters of disease and hunger, malnutrition, ignorance, These are the children I ask you to help treat with your help and assistance to UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, to help feed, cure, and educate the children of the developing countries only jet hours away from our very doorstep. I know you want to help, so write UNICEF, United Nations, New York, 10017. Thank you.
Once again, what is so clear in the bright daylight becomes shadowy and blurred in the dim rays of the moon. Madame Pinipes, a sorceress who has been employed by the Adamses to exorcise a ghost, obviously has been exorcised herself. And this is no time to ask John and Abigail if they really do believe in ghosts.
She's dead, John?
Yes.
But how? How did she die?
Well, she...
I saw her lying on the floor. I assumed she'd been struck down, but...
I know. There isn't a single mark of violence.
Then how did she die? Someone... Something must have... Now, we heard her scream. We both heard her. And what was she muttering when we came in here?
The ghost. The ghost.
Yes, and something else.
There is such a thing as a ghost. That's what she said.
So you see, she never really believed it in herself. To her, it was just a way of making money. But then at the very end, she saw a ghost and it killed her.
She...
How?
Well, she may have died of fright. Look at the absolutely terrified expression on her face. Have you ever seen such horror on a human countenance?
I see it. But I don't believe it killed her.
Why not?
Because she didn't really believe in ghosts. She wasn't an ignorant, superstitious person.
Neither are you, neither am I, but we've been having our doubts lately.
And what is this? This thing clutched in her hand?
A piece of cloth. It must be a ghostly vestment, part of the shroud worn by the unfortunate late Duc d'Ormond.
No, not this. Look, it's muslin cloth.
Well, ghosts do wear shrouds of muslin, don't they?
John, this cloth is fresh. New. That proves that she was attacked, and she tried to fight.
We had better call the authorities.
And for what purpose had you employed this woman?
We were having trouble with a ghost, Monsieur Commissioner.
Ah, so, make a note of that, Sergeant. The house is haunted, then?
It would appear to be.
If the ghost killed her...
If the ghost killed her... Oh, surely, Monsieur, you cannot believe in ghosts.
Monsieur Adams, I have an open mind on the subject.
But such a thing, it's not...
It's not what? Possible? Yet, you and Madame say you heard the thing yourselves.
Well, we may have heard the wind whistling through the chimney. Surely, Monsieur Commissioner, you, a man like yourself, you cannot believe in ghosts.
Monsieur, as a police officer, I must adhere to the facts. And these are the only facts we have.
Well, then...
At present.
What do you propose to do?
Nothing.
A woman has been murdered.
Well, the physician who examined her could find no mark or sign of violence.
But something must be done.
I ask you, monsieur, what? If the deed was committed by a ghost, how do we proceed against him? But, monsieur, there is a more convenient explanation.
Convenient?
Well, perhaps satisfactory. The woman was over 80. It is entirely possible she died of old age. Yes, that would satisfy everyone. Sergeant, write that she died of old age. The most respectable killer of all.
Why do you insist?
insist on walking outdoors in this dreadful weather.
Because, my dear, we must have a talk. A confidential talk.
Lorraine!
There is a ghost.
Oh, no, 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 Abigail, not you.
And I can prove it.
How? Oh, please explain it before we catch our death.
John, I want you to make up the most far-fetched story you can think of.
Why?
About politics. And tell it to me in the library.
But I don't understand.
The more impossible, the better.
But why?
John, I'm afraid if I tell you, you won't do it.
But you'll have to tell me eventually.
I won't have to tell you.
Then how will I ever know?
Oh, you'll find out. Now, please, let's go back to the library. And you must tell me the story with a straight face, in the utmost confidence. It must be a very serious matter. You must play your part to perfection.
But my dear, I'm not an actor.
No, but you're something even better. You are a lawyer.
Abigail, this is incredible.
Really?
Yes, this message I have just received from St. Petersburg.
Really, my dear?
Yes, from Count Ramyuntsev, a confidential minister to the court.
But what have we to do with the Russians?
Well, the Count believes our two countries have a great deal in common.
I can't imagine what.
Well, you know, the Russians are established on the western end of our continent. We may one day become very close neighbors. We share a common border.
I hadn't thought of that.
France, as you know, holds extensive territories to the south, and they fear she will try to expand.
Oh?
Yes, and the Russians would rather have us for a neighbor than the French.
Well, that makes considerable common sense.
And so they are willing to lend us money to aid in our expansion, provided...
Yes, provided?
Provided we break off all relations with the French.
Oh, I see.
A Russian alliance. Ah, what an interesting possibility. Tom, your early dinner isn't for an hour yet.
You needn't expect me to dine in this house.
Tom, now, what is it?
You accused me of selling out to France. And all the time you were scheming to betray us to Russia.
Me?
You needn't look so innocent. I've been told that you're in correspondence with the court at St. Petersburg.
For what purpose?
How can you ally us to the most tyrannical ruler in Europe?
Who told you I was in correspondence with the Russians?
A confidential source.
The Count de Vergennes.
How did you know?
I shall explain it at dinner.
And you say this ghost or whatever overhears our conversation and reports it to de Vergennes.
Listen.
That is our ghost.
That sound? Where's it coming from?
The library. And, yeah, there he goes now.
Where?
Well, obviously, he's leaving the house.
Well, let us settle this thing, John.
No, let me go first.
Oh, no.
Oh, no danger. I shall have two stout gentlemen to protect me. Now, let me open the door. Hand me the candelabra. Now, look.
Where?
Just to the right of the fireplace. Do you see? On the floor.
Footprints?
Yes.
Those are footprints. Outlined in white powder.
Yes, a lady's face powder. Cornstarch powder. I sprinkled some on the floor.
Someone seems to have walked out of the wall.
That wall, it must have a false entrance, a hidden panel. We should have no trouble finding it. Now that we know what to look for, there must be a hidden release. Here, tap against every part of the wall. That's it. Keep tapping all over.
Listen.
We found it.
Oh, look. Look, the center panel is opening.
Listen. The ghost noise.
There can't be a ghost inside. Or can there?
It's a long, long passageway. Feel the breeze.
That's what it is, John. The breeze. The breeze whistling through the passageway when the panel is open. That's what makes the noise.
Are you sure, Tom?
Pull this panel closed. See? The air is no longer rushing along in the passage.
Then the noise is created when the ghost...
Or whoever.
enters and leaves.
And that's why Madame Pinipesa was frightened to death. She encountered him.
It is the Duc d'Ormond wandering about his ancestral home. Or is it a spy who reports all our conversations to the Duc de Vergennes? Tom, shall you help me find out?
Gladly. But how?
The ghost is on his way, obviously, to report to the Count that you and I have had a serious difference of opinion. Let us retire to the dining room and finish our dinner. Give him an opportunity to return tomorrow for his regular evening spy work.
It is no secret.
What is no secret, Count Vergennes?
That your country's existence is threatened by factional strife.
Factional strife may be a sign of vigorous national health.
Oh, my dear Adams. Now, suppose France supports your side.
My side?
Suppose we give you money, even troops, in the event of civil war.
Assuming all you say is true, why support me?
We would support a solid, conservative person, such as yourself. Do I make myself clear?
I must say, sir, you seem to have a most incisive grasp of the situation.
We have excellent sources of information.
So I see.
A word to the wise. Consider it.
Indeed, sir. I shall. I fear, Mr. Jefferson, that further discussion between us is pointless.
I shall write to the Congress. They must choose between you and me.
I shall write in the same manner. I have no intention of listening to further lies and slander on your part.
And I have no intention of remaining a moment longer under this roof.
Allow me to show you the door, sir. Well, if our ghost was there, we gave him an earful.
If he was there.
Did you gentlemen stage your quarrel?
Abigail, you shouldn't be here.
Why not?
But it might be dangerous.
But it was all my idea.
You know, Abigail, sometimes it's difficult for me to believe you're a woman.
I accept that as the sincerest compliment you are capable of, Tom.
It was so intended.
Listen.
Yes?
Our ghost bestirs himself.
Right.
The panel has just opened. That's the wind, I hope.
And now the panel has closed. He must be headed for the doorway to the library.
But if he is, I'm ready for him.
Now! Hold him! Hold him!
I've got him!
Abigail, get a light. A light, fetch a light.
Yes!
Here! Look!
What?
It's the police commissioner!
Madame, it's you. At your service.
What
am I doing here? Yes, you well may ask.
And we are asking.
You see, I am conducting an official investigation.
Indeed, sir.
Yes. There have been allegations of a ghostly presence on these premises. And so, since ghosts are...
Ghosts are what?
Ghosts are illegal.
You could have told us you were on the premises.
No, sir, but it was a confidential investigation.
I understand.
Have you found the ghost?
No, Abigail, nor do I think the commissioner ever will. Will you agree with me, Commissioner, that the ghost would seem to have left these premises for good?
Yes, monsieur. It would seem that way.
And we'll mention it to no one. Not even to Monsieur le Comte de Vergennes.
Oh, that would be appreciated, madame.
Besides, the library appears to be too drafty a place in which to discuss various matters in the future.
I understand, monsieur.
So I don't think that the ghost will be entertained by the conversation of Mr. Adams and his friends anymore.
I understand. Monsieur, madame, good night.
Good night.
Well, that's the end of our ghost. I think.
That noise.
Well, the panel must still be open. Let's close it. It's the wind roaring through the passageway.
John, look. The panel. It's closed. It's not the wind. It's...
Now, Abigail, oh. I am sure there must be a reasonable explanation.
I'm sure there was, but John and Abigail Adams never found it. Within a few months, they received orders from the Congress, which transferred them to England, where John Adams became the first American ambassador to the court of St. James. And if you think he had problems in Paris, when he arrived in London, he really that's another story. I'll be back with a sidelight on this one in just a moment.
Channel 33 is prepared to run tank crew qualification course alpha.
Crew, port, gonna ready.
Somehow you get the feeling it's not the tank they're testing.
Move out. Driver, move out.
Step on the throttle and 750 horsepower jumps to your hand. Ahead is a 60-degree gradient of mud and rocks. Although your stomach wants to bail out, you're ready. You're riding in an M60A2 tank, 54 tons of armored steel. Months of Army training as rugged as the Texas terrain you're rumbling through has put you here, smack in the middle of our proving grounds. When you make it, you'll be a proud, proven member of Armor.
Very good.
And you'll earn rewards as exciting as the job.
Join the people who join the Army. You could start building your tomorrow.
For more information, call 800-523-5000.
There's something almost, I can't say supernatural about Adams and Jefferson. Natural enemies, they were warm friends. They outlived all the other heroes of the Revolution. They became the grand old men of the new country of the United States of America. And America became a fusion of their opposing ideas. And if you really want something to think about, they both died on the exact same day, the 4th of July of 1826, on the 50th anniversary of the Republic. Our cast included Michael Wager, Marion Seldes, Court Benson, Bryner Rayburn, and Guy Sorrell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Well, that's what it is, all right. Seaweed. Nothing but a simple fungus.
Why, is it poisonous?
Absolutely not. Wouldn't harm a fly, and unless, of course...
Unless what, of course?
It's kind of nutty, you know, but it's a special fungus in a way.
Oh, now, come on, Jake. Let me have it.
I feel kind of silly, Walt. I mean, it's only because ever since Maud died, I'm kind of a, like Dickens, an old antiquarian, and I read up on offbeat subjects.
Like what?
Well, this particular seaweed. In the Middle Ages and all like that, it was like, you know, frog's eyes and bat's fur and all the junk that got boiled up in a cauldron when someone wanted to mess around with black magic. I mean, kind of crazy even to mention it, but since it worries you so much, there's no chance you got a witch somewhere in your house, is there?
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Thank you.
beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. A report from Bangkok, Thailand says North Vietnam has freed 9 Americans and 5 other foreigners captured last spring in the communist takeover of South Vietnam. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. UPI quotes diplomatic sources as saying the 14 people were handed over to officials of the UN High Commissioner for Refugees at Hanoi Airport Thursday morning. The report says they are to fly to Bangkok aboard a plane chartered by the UN. There has been no official identification of those released. More news in a moment.
Most appetizers you eat, but there's one appetizer you drink, Dubonnet.
Before that's time to say, I'll have a glass of Dubonnet before a meal by day or night. Dubonnet is always right before, yeah, before. It's the time before, for Dubonnet.
Think of Dubonnet as an appetizer, a wine you drink before meals, before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. It's right for your appetite. Whether you serve it straight, on the rocks with a twist or soda, the distinctive taste of Dubonnet before makes what comes after that much better. Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course.
Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
USA, Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
President Ford is in Los Angeles, where he has just made a speech to a Republican fundraising dinner. Robert Pierpoint has a report.
The president once again mainly preached to the already converted, telling the Republicans at the fundraising dinner just what they had come to hear, warning that 1976 is the year to save the two-party system or abandon America to one-party rule. Mr. Ford made clear he believes he is the man to save the system.
Our president will not fling open the U.S. Treasury to every city with a hole in its pocket.
At another point, President Ford declared the Republican elephant will neither be stampeded nor exterminated, a promise his audience met with warm applause. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, Los Angeles.
President Ford on Wednesday again threatened to veto any bill providing a federal bailout to prevent default by New York City. The president said that if New York does default, he would support only temporary aid to pay for vital police, fire, and health services. Among those criticizing the president's position was Governor Hugh Carey of New York.
With only life and property to be protected, with Mr. Ford deliberately omitting any reference to schools, sanitation, and other basic services, the Ford formula, indeed, is a plan for federally supervised martial law for the world's leading city.
Governor Hugh Carey of New York. The House Ways and Means Committee has voted to continue the $2 billion in business tax cuts made earlier this year, but the committee refused to cut the maximum corporate tax rate of 48%. President Ford wanted it cut to 46%. The committee also voted to make changes in the tax laws on capital gains. That provision would gradually increase from 6 months to 1 year, the time that a taxpayer must hold an asset in order to claim the capital gains tax rate. The Senate Judiciary Committee Wednesday continued its hearings on several proposed constitutional amendments to outlaw forced school busing for racial balance. Senator William Roth, Republican of Delaware, said amending the Constitution is the only ironclad way to prevent forced busing. Mayor Harvey Sloan of Louisville, Kentucky, where a major busing plan went into effect this fall, said that the courts have shown a lack of imagination by ordering busing as a single answer to the complex problem of school desegregation. An airliner flying into Tegucigalpa, Honduras, overshot the runway Wednesday night and went down a slope. The American ambassador to Honduras was among the injured. Ambassador Philip Sanchez was hospitalized with back injuries. There's no exact count on the others injured, but officials say there were no fatalities. The plane was a Honduran Airlines 737 jetliner flying in from New Orleans. Now this.
Don Rickles versus National Car Rental. As this episode opens, Don, striding through a major airport, comes to a National Car Rental counter and spots a small sign.
Miss, what's this $13.95 a day? Prices that low went out when I used my nightlight and thought it was television.
Sir, that's one of National's new deflated rates.
$13.95? What do I get, an Eskimo sled and whale meat?
You get a car like GM's new Chevette or a Vega.
$13.95. And do I mortgage my house to pay the mileage charge?
There's no mileage charge. It's $13.95, period. You just pay for the gas you use and return the car to the city where you rented it.
Look, those are two-door cars. I'm traveling with the whole band. Obviously, the drummer's going to have the job.
Want a larger car? We've lowered the rates there, too. You see, at National, we feature new GM cars. We offer S&H green stamps on U.S. rentals, and now you get our green light service at deflated rates.
Deflated rates? You must be trying to go broke.
Rates not discountable and available at most National locations. Economy cars subject to availability.
A study commissioned by the federal government says that one out of every five American adults is functionally illiterate and unable to cope in today's society. Calling the results of their study surprising and perhaps even shocking, the author said that some 23 million Americans cannot read well enough to understand the newspaper help wanted ads, figure the best grocery buy, or make a train reservation. Doug Poling, CBS News.
The sounds of beautiful music for beautiful Puget Sound continues on KIXI.